Raised by Soundfest is coming Saturday, December 7th. Go to raisedbysoundfest.com for more information.
This is William Luke White. You're listening to WYXR 91.7 FM Memphis.
This is the Daily Memphian Midday News Brief, and I'm Natalie Van Gundy. The TVA Board of Directors plans to vote soon on serving XAI, the massive supercomputer in southwest Memphis. Samuel Hardiman says TVA has a board policy that requires a vote on projects that need more than 100 megawatts of electricity.
The TVA board agenda includes an item titled Greater Than 100 Megawatt Firm Power Arrangement with CTC Property LLC, XAI. If approved, XAI would be allowed to go fully on TVA's transmission system and LG&W's distribution system. For months, the giant supercomputer has been partially on the local grid. According to power contracts with LG&W obtained by the Daily Memphian, it has contracts for up to 68 megawatts of electricity. For the Daily Memphian, I'm Samuel Hardiman.
Memphis Shelby County Schools board members and Superintendent Marie Fagans have agreed on how to measure her success as a leader. Laura Testino says success looks like reducing the number of students who are several grade levels behind in reading and math, putting more high school students on track to graduate, and reducing the number of students who are chronically absent.
These metrics and more are part of the superintendent evaluation rubric that school board members approved in a meeting on Thursday. The unanimous vote concluded a contentious process that revealed rifts among school board members and Fagans, who has led the district for the last 7 months. For the Daily Memphian, I'm Laura Testino.
More on these stories and others are available at dailymemphian.com.
Relationships can change the world. Right. They can change the way you think.
This is a journey.
Let me take you on a journey.
There will still be the journey.
The journey.
New sheriff in town.
The journey.
Journey.
This thing is bigger than Nino Brown. This is
the journey.
The journey.
What is it that moved you?
The journey.
Welcome back to another episode of The Journey. I'm your host, Larry Robinson, and today I'm dressed down a little bit because my guest, he wanted to dress down. He's always suited and booted and nice, so I literally wanted to come down and chill, and I wanted him to feel comfortable. This Memphis icon, you already know. But before we get to him, we got to go with our quote, because I think this brother actually will have a lot to say about it. It goes like this. Success is to be measured not so much by the position that one has reached in life as by the obstacles which he has overcome while trying to succeed. That comes from Booker T. Washington, author, politician, and true activist. Today we have newsman, news icon, Jeremy Pierre. Did y'all know he was born in New Orleans? Went to the great St. Aug. His brother went to Xavier University. He went another route. He wasn't a medical professional out of Xavier. He wanted to be a journalist out of Xavier. He's also a man of the purple and gold. And I ain't talking about St. Aug. I'm talking about Omega Sci-Fi. He's a son. He's a brother. And truly, truly a good man and a trendsetter in this community. What's up, Jeremy?
My man. How you doing?
I'm good, man. I thought you might wear the gold boots, but You know, that's all right.
You know, got older, got bad feet right now.
Bad feet. You done hopped enough,
yeah,
huh?
Yeah, I done hopped enough, you know? Man, but that was a heck of an introduction. I appreciate you for that.
So tell me, what's that quote mean to you, man?
I'm not supposed to be here right now, Larry.
Really?
I'm not supposed to be here. I had a setback all through school. Grade school that probably would have shut me down.
Really?
But that setback really made me realize how bright my light can shine.
Really?
And just the power of connections.
Okay.
And community and family.
Right.
And you brought up St. Aug, you know, St. Aug is really, that really defines a lot of what I am today.
You know what's interesting about you say that? I've never met a group of people. When I say people, I meant graduates of St. Aug. Shout out to my boy Austin Taylor, who's now the headmaster.
The president
of St. Aug, man. He gave up his career in media at ESPN and BET. He did it twice to come back and work at St. Aug. That's how strong. So y'all that know about St. Aug, support St. Aug.
Man.
It's something special, and it's special for these young black boys.
Yeah, I would have on my class ring, but you can see the tan. I gave it all the rest today.
Okay.
But that's the tan. It's usually right here on this finger.
Oh, wow, man. So. That's a beautiful thing, man. So you know Stan Verrett.
Stan Verrett, man, that's my mentor.
Really?
My mentor. When Stan celebrated his 30th year out of St. Aug, I was celebrating my 5th year out of St. Aug. So we have a picture of us wearing the same shirt from maybe 2015 or so. And we always see each other at the NABJ convention.
There's a lot of St. Aug grads
that are in media.
Absolutely. Well, you know, even in sports, you got Avery Johnson.
Yep. Avery Johnson, who didn't start a game while he was at St. Aug.
Are you serious?
He never started a game. As
a point guard, as an NBA champion point guard, he never started a game at St. Aug. But y'all got so many athletes at St. Aug, man.
And look, Bernard Griffith, the famed basketball coach from St. Aug, can tell you that story. And that's that quote you just read, and from Booker T.
Yeah,
that right there defines of every man that has come through to walk those halls of St. Aug. He didn't start a game.
Wow.
And so
now where you it ain't where you start.
Start. How you finish?
Yeah, it's how you finish. Oh wow, beautiful man. So tell me about the home. Tell me about the crib. You know, you remember being young and suiting up and getting that tie on and going to St. Aug.
Man, let me tell you, New Orleans is a beautiful place.
Okay.
Before Katrina, New Orleans was cooking.
I love
cooking.
New Orleans.
It was cooking.
Man. Yeah.
It was cooking. And I really say, if you were someone growing up in New Orleans before Katrina, it was a special place, man.
Okay.
And I think that has a lot to do with who I am today.
Okay.
And I know you say that flavor.
Yeah.
That, you know, but man, that. Oof.
Y'all got your own swag, man. New Orleans and Memphis are very akin in the sense that a lot of culture, a lot of soul. And as I always say, Memphians are some of the most creative people in the world. I would say the same thing about New Orleans.
Cousins.
Yeah.
We're cousins.
Absolutely. You know?
But one thing I remember about growing up, the crib, structure and foundation.
Okay.
For sure.
I break that down a little bit for those young people that may not understand what you mean.
Well, when I say structure, every student in New Orleans, they had something they had to participate in, whether it was sports, band, cooking, dance, the arts, everybody. You know, some football players even can play an instrument. It was structure. My structure was basketball, church, drums.
Okay.
Okay. That was my structure. I knew Mondays I was going to be at church. Tuesdays I had basketball practice at St. Oak, boom, boom, boom.
Right.
Tuesday through Friday, basketball practice. But Mondays and Wednesdays, church.
Really?
That was structure.
Okay.
And you know,
you got a game?
Yeah, I got a little game.
You got a little game.
A little game. I'm out of shape right now. I got a little game. But it was all about structure. And I think every parent, I would say a majority of parents in New Orleans had structure for their children.
Okay.
Even if you lived in the projects, it was structured. You knew you had to be inside by the time. I had some friends that lived in the projects, St. Bernard projects. Mm-hmm. I'm from the 7th Ward. I went to all my schools except one were in the 7th Ward.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of the kids that I went to St. Aug with and mm-hmm. even went to elementary school with lived in the St. Bernard projects or even some of the projects uptown. But when them lights came on, I gotta go, y'all. It was structure.
Right. Okay. All right. Who'd you dream you was going to be as a young person? You know, did you always want to be on the news or was it?
I dream I was going to be as a young person? Honestly, I thought I was going to be like an Arsenio Hall.
Really?
Yeah.
So you always wanted to be in front of the camera?
Pretty much. Okay. But Arsenio Hall, growing up, I had to watch the Arsenio Hall show. Not the new version of
Arsenio. Yeah, I know.
I'm talking about the old.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
When'd
you know you was going to be okay? When'd you know that, okay, I can do this thing called life?
I'm going to bring it back to St. Aug. And I freak people out all the time. I didn't cross the stage, the graduation stage.
What?
At St. Aug. I was the senior class president. And we had just returned from Hurricane Katrina. I was supposed to be the first class to graduate from St. Aug after Katrina.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a principal who was mean and stern.
Okay.
And he saw the potential. He saw it and how everyone believed in me. Teachers, even people in the archdiocese.
Mm-hmm.
I had so many people.
Now, are you Catholic?
I'm not Catholic.
Okay, okay.
But, you know, growing up in New Orleans, you get a little bit of everything.
Right,
you know.
Right.
But even...
How did you not graduate? Wait a minute.
I got my diploma.
Okay, hold on. Listen. I usually end it on a cliffhanger, but I'm not today. What I'm going to do is, on the other side, Jeremy going to tell us how he got suspended and did not get to cross as the class president at St. Aug, his senior year. Listen, this is The Journey on the Kazukian Network, and we going to come right back. So you better come back, because it's juicy. See you in a minute.
This is a journey.
Let me take you on a journey.
Welcome to Her Journey, presented by Kazukian Media Group.
We believe Her Journey will encourage young women and help them see that life is a journey.
You have to continue to walk in your purpose.
We cannot control how other people respond to us.
As long as you have breath in your body, story does not end. Every day that God grants you, you have an opportunity to rewrite your story.
Our mission is clear: to inspire and empower the next generation of women leaders, innovators, and change makers.
Her Journey chronicles the trials, tribulations, and triumphs of 10 phenomenal women right here in Memphis, Tennessee, who have pretty successfully navigated this thing called life. Watch Her Journey, hosted by me, Joy Doss. Brought to you by the Kazukian Media Group and proudly sponsored by Nike, Black Community Commitment.
Welcome back to The Journey. Listen, on the other side, we talked about Jeremy Pierre and him not graduating from, well, he graduated from St. Aug, but he didn't get to graduate or walk across that stage and get that diploma. But before we get there, we got a couple other questions to ask him. Number one, when did you realize you was a black man?
When did I realize I was a black man? You know what? It had to be once I moved out of Louisiana.
Really?
Matter of fact, it had to be once I moved out of New Orleans.
Okay.
It had to be once I moved out of New Orleans. My first job on air was Monroe, Louisiana.
Okay.
And I got pulled over. And when I tell you, it was a Louisiana state trooper. I was traveling on Interstate 20. And this is around the time something had just happened. I can't remember what, but it was a national ordeal.
Okay.
Dealing with the police. And I said, man, that problem, that had never happened to me here.
Uh-huh.
You know, living in New Orleans, but, you know, when I got on that road,
mm-hmm.
traveling to North Louisiana,
mm-hmm.
which is a totally different country.
Right.
And this police officer said, where you going? I said, I'm on my way back to Monroe. What you doing there? I've been pulled over by the police before,
uh-huh.
but I had never been asked by a police officer, what you doing? Like, what you going there for?
Kind of accusing.
Yeah. Wow. And so I didn't think much of it until I got back to my apartment in Monroe. I was like, dang, what if I would have gave him the wrong answer?
Right.
You know? So,
I
mean.
Your moment.
It's not as eye-opening as some other folks.
Right.
But it was just like coming from a majority black city.
Right.
Where you know the police officers. And that's one thing I can say about New Orleans. You know some of these police officers. Either your mama went to school with them, or you go to church with them, or y'all eat at the same restaurant. You know the police officers.
Okay.
You know, but, you know, going outside of New Orleans, it was a totally different story.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. I bet you it was pretty scary, too.
It was just like, I hope I give him the right answer. You got to think about the answers you're giving the police officer.
Okay.
You know?
Right. Okay. Okay. Walking across the street, guy stops you. He pulls up and stops you before you get across. And he asks you, hey, man, you look like somebody. Who are you? What would you say?
Who am I?
Uh-huh.
I'm Jeremy.
Okay. Anybody, who's Jeremy?
Who's Jeremy?
Yeah.
An amazing person. You want to get to know me?
Uh-huh. Okay. That'd be your answer.
That'd be my answer.
Okay. All right. What's Jeremy's superpower? What's that one thing you do better than anybody you know?
I can break ice.
You can break the ice?
I can break the ice.
Okay. Give me an example.
You know, honestly, people think that since I'm on TV, I got to be this big, arrogant person, right?
Mm-hmm.
Untouchable.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-mm. I can walk into an area, a crowd, break ice. I often say this. You invite me to a Ku Klux Klan meeting.
Uh-huh.
They probably gonna be shocked that I'm there, but I'm gonna break the ice. You know what I'm saying? You know, y'all look pretty warm in there. Take them hoods off. Let me see your face. You know, just break the ice. You know,
okay.
And you know,
okay.
Because, you know, people think I'm this, Walter Cronkite.
Uh-huh.
Say you're in the news, you know,
right.
You got to be this professional, which I am professional, but I'm
right.
just not uptight.
Okay.
Like that. I don't like tight situations.
Okay. I like to say you bring a little swag to the news.
Appreciate you.
All right.
You know, curbing on curbing.
All right, so listen. You were telling me about the fact that you graduated from St. Aug, but you didn't get to walk across the stage.
Right.
What happened, man? How did you, as the class president at St. Aug, one of the most prestigious schools in all the South,
right.
How'd you do that, man? What happened? What'd you do?
Man, it's not what I did. It was just who I was.
Okay.
And
what do you mean by that? Unpack that.
Again, you know, I believe my parents grew me up and put me in certain situations to let my light shine.
Okay.
And I knew this because of their connections. Everybody loved me.
Okay.
You know, because I wasn't bad.
Okay.
I was just the funny man.
Okay.
The funny man. You know, never meant any trouble.
Right.
And like I said, you know, going to St. Aug, I knew I didn't want to be the student body president. That was my boy Hot Dog. He grew up in Kenner. His aunt is also on the news in New Orleans. So that was my boy Hot Dog. We call him Hot Dog.
Uh-huh.
And so he said, I'm not going to run against you. I'm going to run for student body. And I said, all right, I'm going to be the class president. This is what we going to do.
Uh-huh.
Because we the first class since Katrina.
Okay.
And I did a whole bunch of projects. You know, I got us together. It was about 120 of us. We refurbished the whole entire chapel garden. It was cool, and I got everything donated.
Okay.
Everything donated. St. Aug didn't have to pay for nothing.
Okay.
Got the food donated. It was a Saturday. It was a great Saturday, man. We did all type of raffles to raise money for us to go to a class trip, which the principal canceled it. He saw that. He saw that I had a lot of influence.
Okay.
And he wanted to make an example out of someone. I was that example. There was a video that I didn't take. It was called St. Aug Exposed. Yeah.
Okay.
I didn't tape it. I was just in it.
Okay.
I didn't know where it was going. This was around the time when MySpace.
Uh-huh.
You remember MySpace?
Yeah,
it was on MySpace.
Okay.
And at St. Aug, when I was there, we still had corporal punishment. So, yeah.
You could get licks.
You get licks. So the video was of one of the students getting a lick, because in gym.
Uh-huh.
And this was right before Christmas break. And after the student got his licks, I believe he was a freshman or a sophomore, mm-hmm. The camera turned to me and I said, uh-oh, St. Aug Exposed. And that was it.
Oh, man. And mm-hmm. How did they bring that to you? How did you, now understand, you done went all this time to graduate and walk across that stage in high school, and you're the class president.
Class president.
How did they bring that you were not going to be able to graduate or walk across the stage?
Oh, they told my mama. My mama burst out in tears.
Really?
4 years, I said, oh, yeah, yeah. And that really could have had a hampering on my future, because it was just like, dang, I plan to go to college, finish college, but no, it didn't stop me. It made me, it refined me. It refined me. Because you know what? When you put in a situation like that, people can give up on you.
Right.
Nah. All the teachers didn't give up on me. They didn't look at me no different.
Really?
Matter of fact, there was so many teachers who were upset, not at me, but at the decision the principal made. They were so upset.
Why do you think that was the response, or that was the punishment that the principal wanted to hand down?
I couldn't even tell you. And from what I hear, a lot of people didn't like that decision. Because again, he expelled a lot of young men. That it getting expelled from St. Aug probably did put a dent in their future.
Really?
And like I said, he allowed me to get my diploma, but a lot of them didn't.
Right.
A lot of them didn't. And, you know, I'm approaching 20 years out of high school. You know, I got a godson that goes to St. Aug right now.
Uh-huh.
And I always make jokes with him. I say, I might be able to cross the stage with you. You know, my diploma says 2007, yours says 2027.
Okay, so let me ask you. What would it be like if they said, you know what, Jeremy, come back. We're going to let you walk across the stage.
Man, that would be mean a world, because my mother, not only for me, but for my mom. Because the principal doing that, it took a dream away from my brother.
Why?
Because my mother didn't want to deal with St. Aug anymore.
Oh, wow.
So he went to another all-boy parochial school that he didn't want to graduate from.
So it changed your life in many
that,
ways.
That right there. Because I was going to be the sixth boy from my family to graduate from St. Aug.
Oh, man.
Well, to walk across the stage.
Yeah, walk across the stage.
And get my diploma. And my graduation was very dim. My high school graduation was very dim.
Mm.
But it was exciting, too, because I got accepted into college.
Okay. So for those kids that might be listening to you, for those people that might be listening to you, what lesson did you gain from that moment?
What did I gain?
Mm-hmm.
Keep on pushing. Don't let one setback put you down.
Right.
You know, keep on pushing. And that carried me through college. At one point I didn't think I was gonna graduate from Xavier. You know, your boy got put on academic probation.
Really?
Then got suspended. But then that was a wake up call. You know, because while I was on academic probation, my mother is hit with breast cancer. I'm like, damn.
Uh-huh.
I gotta get, whew. You know, Xavier sent me that letter to my house saying you are suspended for the 2008-2009 academic school year. I said, oh, Lord. I'm gonna explain. And my mother is going through chemotherapy.
Wow.
Yeah.
What was it? Is there a moment?
Believe me, I did not tell my mother.
Your mother never.
Oh, no, she just found out. She probably found out during my class reunion at Xavier.
Really?
Back in 2021, she found out. I was like, you know, I was suspended from Xavier.
Right. Oh, man. Wow.
But I finally finished. So.
You said you finally finished.
Yeah.
Keep on pushing.
Yeah, keep on pushing. You know, and when I got back, I started, that's when I was trying to get in to the fraternity. Mm. And I really buckled down, because to get into any fraternity or even be suggested for any fraternity at Xavier, it's not the regular 2.5, you got to have a 2.7.
Okay.
You got to have a 2.7. So when I got back into Xavier, man, I was taking classes over, trying to get up to at least a 2.8, graduated from Xavier. I ain't ashamed, 2.98.
Okay.
You know, I graduated with thank you, Lordy.
You graduated, thank you, Lordy.
Thank you.
Not magna cum laude.
Or summa.
Summa cum laude.
Thank you, Lordy.
Thank you, Lordy.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
Oh, man. Any regrets, man? Any regrets? Anything that you go back and say, man, you know what? I would want a do-over on that.
No. Nope. I think honestly, with everything that I've gone through, it shaped me put me in a position to receive so much love and understand that, you know, you don't have to think of the worst of everything. Don't think the worst of everything. Because at the end of the day, you know, I often tell people this. I was thinking about, man, what if I lost my job? Mm-hmm. If I lost my job, I'll be okay. Because the influence, the power of connection,
mm-hmm.
And my mother taught me that. The power of my pastor taught me that. Bishop Paul Morton taught me that. My godfather taught me that, who is from Memphis.
Uh-huh.
Jasper Williams taught me that. The power of connection. It's like electricity.
So. Okay. Relationships. What you mentioned in connections, but I'm imagining that's another word for relationships.
Right.
How important are relationships to you?
You know, relationships, and I often tell people this, I don't look at people as stores. When I'm at the job, I don't look at people as stores. I always sit down and talk to them, try to build that relationship. Even though they feel like they know me, because they see me on TV.
Right.
Well, let me get to know you. You know? Relationships can change the world.
Right.
They can change the way you think. They can change the way you eat, mm-hmm. you know?
Mm-hmm.
I often tell people, you know, growing up, I used to eat pig lips out the jaw.
Pig lips?
Come on, man. Pig lips. Pig lips in a bag of Lay's. It's my sauce.
I ain't never heard pig lips in my life.
I'm going to bring you a jaw back.
Nah, you ain't. Don't do it.
Going to school with so many doctors.
Right.
You know that could have a bad effect on your hypertension.
Uh-huh.
I don't need these pig lips no more. You know?
So the relationship.
Right. They can help your health.
Okay.
You know?
All right.
You know, relationships in New Orleans. You can learn better ways to make gumbo.
Okay.
You know?
So you going back to 7th Ward. See the house. I want you to visualize the house that you grew up in. You walk, you see it, you walk in the front door. Sitting there eating a bag of Lay's and some pig lips is little Jeremy. What would you say to little Jeremy today?
Man, do more listening than talking. Do more listening than talking. God gave you two ears and one mouth for a reason.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
Do more listening.
All right. Well, listen, last question, last statement, last everything. I want you to say right in that camera.
Right there?
Yep. I want you to leave these young people that are listening and some of the old people that's listening to you right now, that's looking at you right now with a Jeremy Pierre-ism.
Man, one thing I learned as a member of the basketball program at Xavier University of Louisiana, where then Coach Danton Jackson, who's now at Talladega College in Talladega, Alabama, he taught me one thing, and I use it right now. And a lot of people, whether you're young or old, have a problem with doing it. Check your work, and stay in your lane. That lane, you may not know what that lane is right now, but you'll find it. And when you find it, stay in it. Don't get out of it, because you don't want to run into nobody else in somebody else's lane. But stay in your lane and check your work. That'll get you farther than anyone else who is doing a mediocre job, but possibly your boss.
Told you it was going to be another good one. Larry Robinson for my guest.
Yes.
Jeremy Pierre.
Yeah, and next week on 60 Minutes.
Hey, we're going to keep bringing them. I just need you to keep coming back, because this is Memphis's finest, the finest men in this community. Till next time, take care.
Thank you to our partners, the Delta Boule and Tennessee Valley Authority. To hear more incredible stories like this, be sure to download the Kazukian app from the App Store or Google Play. Or check out the Journey Memphis podcast on all your major podcast providers. Also, check us out on the Kazukian Network.
Mm-hmm.
Acoustic Sunday Live, now in its third decade, is proud to support WIXR and to present the Concert to Protect Our Aquifer, taking place at 7 p.m. on Sunday, December 15th at First Congo Church, located at 1000 Cooper Street. Performances by folk and songwriter legends Tom Rush and Steve Forbert, Shakura Saida, and Tim Easton, with special guests Ann Harris and Marcella Simeon. More information at 901-237-2972 or acousticsundaylive.com.
Jazz Ambassadors of the U.S. Army Field Band is performing at Overton High School on Thursday, November 14th from 7 to 8:30. The official touring big band of the United States Army formed in 1969, the Jazz Ambassadors is a 19-member ensemble who has received great acclaim at home in all 50 states and abroad, performing America's greatest original art form, jazz. The concert is free and open to the public. More information and tickets at armyfieldband.com/events.
LRK is proud to support the 2024 Raised by Sound Festival, a nationally recognized full-service architectural planning and interior design firm. LRK has advanced to the built environment in the city of Memphis for over 40 years. Learn more about how LRK can bring your ideas to life at lrk.com.
You're blessed beyond your wildest imagination and don't know it. Because the world that I grew up in, my testimony is not wondering where my next meal was going to come from.
This is a journey.
Let me take you on a journey.
There will still be the journey.
The journey.
New sheriff in town.
The journey.
Journey.
This thing is bigger than Nino Brown. This is
the journey.
The journey.
What is it that moved you?
The journey.
Welcome back to another episode of The Journey. I'm your host, Larry Robinson, and today we have a Memphis icon that I know you're going to love. But before we get to this Memphis icon, let me give you a little quote. The quote comes from Marion Wright Edelman, and it goes like this. You're not obligated to win. You're obligated to keep trying to do the best you can every day. And what's that mean? That means you might not always be successful. You might fall down, skin your knees, bump your head, but you got to keep going every day. That's mandatory, because that's what we made of. So listen, this gentleman, Bishop Ed Stevens, Golden Gate Full Gospel Baptist Church. He's a pastor, he's an entrepreneur. I mean, the Golden Gate Development Corporation, but more importantly, he's a son, a husband, father, and a visionary leader. Oh, and I forgot. He's a member of the Crimson and Cream. He's of that gang, the men of Kappa Alpha Psi. So he's my frat brother. But better than that, he's got three noobs in his house. Well, they ain't in his house no more. They done went on. But nevertheless, without further ado,
yeah.
Bishop.
Larry. Good. Thank you, man. Good to be here. Absolutely.
How you doing, man?
Man, listen, we on top telling the Lord ta-ta. He's good. Yeah, I arrived to your world, so I know I have arrived.
You arrived. Okay. All right, then. Well, you know, shoot, man. I'm honored to have you here.
Thank
man.
You for the invitation. Absolutely.
You have been someone that I have looked up to since my early days in Memphis, man. So
thank you.
So keep thank doing so the great much. Work. Yeah. You're doing thank in the Raleigh you. Area and whatnot. But we gonna try to give people some background on the brother.
All right.
So, you know, it. I know you went Valentine, was it Snowden and then Treadwell.
And
so you ran right. at North Memphis, straight out of North
straight,
Memphis.
Straight out of no, I say North.
Yeah.
There north. Is a North Memphis. North. There's a North Memphis and there's a North Memphis.
Okay.
I was in North. Let's be clear.
Okay. All right. Then. Okay. So let's talk about those early days in North Memphis. What do you remember about the neighborhood? Tell me about the neighborhood you grew up.
Listen, we were really blessed. You know, of course, my mom and dad, you know, it was two of us, my brother and myself.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom was a teacher. My father was, of course, a pastor.
Okay.
As well as worked for the postal
So your
service.
Mama was a pastor?
No, my father.
Your father was
father
a pastor.
Father was
okay.
a pastor. Mom
okay.
was a teacher.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, mom was a teacher in school system. And my dad pastored Oak Grove Baptist Church on 64.
Okay.
And so my brother and myself. And so we grew up, I guess you would call it, middle class African-American
okay.
family and that kind of thing. So I had nothing, a lot of positive memories
got it.
About growing up in the community that we did. I recall clearly we were probably the second African-American family to to move on our street. It was a Jewish community. They moved out and blacks were moving in. And I remember all those days.
Oh, wow. So who outside of your parents had the biggest impact on young Ed Stevens?
You know, I was always around people.
Okay.
So I don't think there's one other person when I was young that had an influence. Mm-hmm. When I started preaching and who I saw that really helped shape me for what I do now was my pastor, Archbishop Leroy Bailey. He was Pastor Leroy Bailey, pastor of First Cathedral Church, but he's from Memphis.
Now, you said, you know, you the other son.
I got to do my research now. I'm the other son. I claim that title. With my pastor for sure.
Yeah, all his kids are looking at you what's wrong with this dude? He ain't one of us.
They know. They don't accept it from anybody. They accept it from me.
Okay.
Yeah, so it was through his life.
Okay.
And just watching him from afar. And then I heard him. He was in town preaching a revival.
Uh-huh.
And I invited him to my church. And thus, really, our relationship mushroomed.
Okay.
And I needed that in my life at that time. Of course, my grandfather was a pastor.
Oh.
And my dad was killed in a car accident going to a wedding in 1972. Oh. I was 12 years old.
Ooh.
Would have been turning 13. So, okay. But my grandfather, my mom's dad, was a pastor also.
Okay.
And so a couple of years later, we went to serve with my grandfather.
Right.
That's actually where I started ministry. I preached my first sermon at my grandfather's church.
Okay.
New Fellowship Baptist Church on Brown. Right. It's a little small church right behind. It's torn down now. It had a fire. But it was right behind Northside.
So wait a minute, you got like four pastors.
That's five generations altogether.
Yeah.
Yes, five generations. I go back past him to my great-grandfather, my grandfather, my father, myself, and now my sons.
How different are you from the person you dreamed you'd be as a kid?
Quite different, I want to think.
Okay.
I want to hope that I have grown immensely and my mind has stretched.
So did you see yourself as a musician, an athlete?
I was not the athletic type. I was in the drama club.
Okay.
And Miss Florence Roach was my speech and drama teacher.
Wait a minute, Flo Roach
that taught me.
Oh, man, now see, now when you come back, Flo might be here. Now, yeah. Flo is doing a lot of work.
I owe a lot to her because as far as public speaking and things of that nature, going through my drama courses and all that and going to the Thespian Association in Washington, D.C. So
really?
My mind expanded. Yeah, oh, absolutely. When I was in 11th grade, so she was my teacher.
So you were going to be a star.
I don't know what I was going to be. I was 15. I was finding my way at that time for sure.
Okay.
But yeah, but my pastor was really influential in my life as far as the career that I'm in now, without a doubt.
You know,
I had my grandfather there, but we're generations apart that I could relate to and do ministry on another level than what I had seen.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. As a young person, we tend to make decisions that impact us one way or the other. What's the decision you made as a young person that ended up having lifelong impact, even though you didn't know it would at the time?
I still believe without a doubt the call of ministry on my life is how I have to respond to that.
When did you know?
I actually knew before I had acknowledged it. I knew about when I was eight. No, my dad died 12. Probably about 12 years old, right in that time frame, right before he passed. But I never said anything.
Mm-hmm.
So it was not until I was 19.
Okay.
Probably 17, but I spoke to my grandfather about it at that time, and we had a conversation, and that's when I really publicly acknowledged, hey, this is what I'm supposed to be doing,
right?
And that kind of thing. I was 18. I was freshman, sophomore at University of Memphis, Memphis State at the time.
Okay,
yeah. So that was kind of the path.
Is there a moment in your life where you can point to that God literally, you knew it was nothing but God?
Oh, absolutely. I'm so glad you asked that question.
Yeah, so come on with it. Come on with it.
Let me tell you, when I say I know, unequivocally, I know that it was God. And that was when the church that I serve now, I just told this story two Sundays ago.
Okay.
When I got the call to come to a vacant church, I was at my grandfather's church.
Right.
And the chairman of the deacon board at the church I serve now, his son happened to be at a revival that I was preaching for my grandfather.
Right.
And he heard me preach and he asked, could I give your name, because the church was about to have another pastor, and he was leaving. So he said, can I give your name to my dad? Chairman Deacon. I said, sure, no problem. The rest is history. But what happened was when I wasn't sure where the church was, when I found out where it was, that next morning, and I'm cutting across the field, but I get up, I go to this church, get out, go to the back lot and kneel on my knee, get on my knees and pray. That next Sunday, when I sat down in what was called the pastoral chair, fast forwarding, they end up calling me, okay, to this church. That's what they call it. And that next Sunday, when I get there to start preaching, to preach, it was the last sermon that I preached for them. I knew that I had been engulfed by the Spirit of God. No doubt in my mind that that was where I was supposed to be. It was a spirit of peace that was beyond my imagination. And I'm telling you this. I know this to be that a fact that this is where God had ordained for me to be, because he gave me a sweet, sweet, sweet peace. And the church has had phenomenal growth. I had great people in the church. It was a good mixture of seniors, middle age, and then, of course, me being 26, young people started really coming out the gazoo, okay? And the church continued to mushroom. We went from one service to two services. Then we added on at that building, went to three services, with all that kind of stuff that was taking place. So God just really had his hand on us. It was definitely him, because I hadn't been anything called church growth. All the things that I'm teaching my ministers and staff, none of that was not really popular at that time. I was really leaning and depending on God, you know, to develop the work and all that. So that's how we were.
All right. Last question of this segment. Most brothers can point to the moment when they realize they were a black man. What was that moment for you like? Hold on real quick. We're going to be right back on the journey. A brother, Bishop Newt Ed Stevens, is going to tell us when he realized he was a black man. Stay right there. Don't go nowhere. We'll be right back on the journey. That's my Muhammad Ali look.
This is a journey.
Let me take you on a journey.
Welcome to Her Journey, presented by Kazukian Media Group.
We believe Her Journey will encourage young women and help them see that life is a journey.
You have to continue to walk in your purpose.
We cannot control how other people respond to us.
As long as you have breath in your body, story does not end. Every day that God grants you, you have an opportunity to rewrite your story.
Our mission is clear: to inspire and empower the next generation of women leaders, innovators, and change makers.
Her Journey chronicles the trials, tribulations, and triumphs of 10 phenomenal women right here in Memphis, Tennessee, who have pretty successfully navigated this thing called life.
Watch Her Journey, hosted by me, Joy Doss, brought to you by the Kazukian Media Group and proudly sponsored by Nike, Black Community Commitment.
I told you we had a Memphis icon that was going to knock your socks off. Well, listen, before we left, we asked him about when he realized he was a black man. Hold up on that. What's your superpower?
My superpower is found in Ephesians chapter 3, verse 20.
Okay.
Now unto him.
Okay.
Who is able to do exceedingly abundantly above all that we ask or think, according to the power of the word that works in you. That's my superpower.
Ooh, you're going to have to break that down for the people in the back. Break it down for the people in the back, man.
Listen, here it is. If you break it up from an exegetical perspective, it's real
now,
simple.
What the heck does exegetical mean?
When you break it down and digest it.
Okay, there you go.
Here it is. Now.
Okay.
What a great way to start anything rather than right now. It's not tomorrow, not yesterday, right now.
Right.
Now unto him.
Okay.
Watch this. Here's the next clause. Who is able?
Okay.
And that word, that ability.
Right.
Who is able to do? Because here's the key. The moment we recognize it's never been about our ability, but yielding to his ability.
Mm.
Now unto him who is able. And people walk around trying to figure themselves out and wondering why you never get anywhere because you're trying to do it in your own strength. Mm-hmm. But when you yield what you have over to the one who has the ability to do exceedingly, and I love what, and watch what God then says in the text. He says, now unto him who is able to do exceedingly abundantly above all that we ask or think. Now that tells me I can go ahead and go for the moon. And when I even get to the moon, you still haven't reached what he's able to do. Ooh. Now unto him who is able to do exceedingly abundantly. That word in the Greek is the word hypotitia. It means to superabound. You asked me about my supernova. It means to superabound. Now unto him who is able to do exceedingly abundantly above all that we ask or think. That's why I challenge people all the time. Go for it. Go for it. Don't limit yourself to a God who is limitless. Mm. Now unto him. So not just one station. But why not three stations? Why not five stations? Why not a station at the Agri Center and a station in Nashville, a station in New York? Now unto him, because we look at us and we are limited. But when we look to him, there is no limits, Doc. And so that's my power juice. That's my word that I live off of. I can go to a funeral and people are down and I'll drop that word on them. Here's how you're going to get through this now that your grandmother is not there. Your mother is not. I know a lot of other scripture, but that's my word. That's my scripture that I live off of. And that helps me to press through when you're dealing with situations and business ventures and all that. And you run into some no's here and there. But now unto him who is able to do exceedingly abundantly above all that you ask or think. But here's the key, according to the power of the word that works in us. That's the critical piece, because the more of the word that you have working in you, the more you'll be able to maximize your potential.
Let me tell you something. I've been going through something, and man, you have just preached the whole word to me, just right here. You have preached the whole word to me, man. And thank you. Man, people, I'm sorry. I am blown away because God keeps sending me these messages, man. And I'm, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
No, thank you, because I'm on assignment. No. I'm not playing. I don't go everywhere. I'm on assignment. When it was you and you called my office, your staff called my office and they set it up. I'm on assignment wherever I go. And that goes back to that now unto him who's able. He can open a door that I can't open.
Right.
Now unto him who is able, and me to get here and see your team and your staff and folks that I've known for years when I got started. I knew God was up to something. He's always up to something.
Mm. Keep on preaching, brother. All right. Tell me about the household. Tell me about the household back in North Memphis.
The household, as far as...
You know, like it was you and your brother.
Just me and my brother,
And your mother.
Yeah.
What'd your brother give you? What did you get from your brother?
A relationship that we have that's still strong today, a bond.
Okay.
Because I know that not all siblings bond, really bond.
Right.
And that was a period when he left, he moved, he went to Lemoore, left and went to work for FedEx, left Memphis and went to Nashville to work for FedEx. And that's where he's been for the last probably 40 years, I think now.
Okay.
And but we're still close and we still talk three times probably a week, at least, you know.
Okay.
And so he's back and forth. Come see mom and et cetera. Right. But no, what he's given me is the fact that we both recognize the importance of family and relationship and keeping that together. So
did you ever have to kick his butt?
Huh?
You ever had to kick his butt?
I was older than him. But now here's the deal. Danny was chubby and I was skinny. But when he was little, I could get on top of him and hold him down. He ain't gonna admit that now. But I'm telling you, that's how it was. Yeah, so, you know, they know Stevie and Danny. They called me Stevie growing up.
Uh-huh.
Danny, his name is Danielle. They call him Danny. They called me Stevie.
Uh-huh.
But I was the junior. But anyway,
wow. Yeah.
He's 2 years younger than me, but I could get him back in. I probably can't get him now.
You can't get him now.
No, I let him have it now. I would acquiesce.
So we're gonna go back. The moment you realized he was a black man.
Here's how I feel about that. The era that I grew up in, I never did not know I was not a black boy that's known a black man.
Yeah.
Because I grew up in the era when, of course, civil rights were really strong. And we had back in the day when I was at Valentine, what was called a black Mondays.
Right.
when we didn't go to school on the Monday. We didn't do school, no, because of the sanitation worker strike and all of that that was taking place at the time. So on Mondays, Black parents would keep their children at home.
Why not? I don't understand that.
Yeah, because there was a protest for the civil rights, whether it was the sanitation worker strike and all that. So on those Mondays, the word would get out, and parents would literally keep their children at home from school on that Monday, Black Monday.
So wait a minute. As a kid, you realized.
I realized. I knew the racial discrimination that was taking place even as a kid.
Right.
Yeah, because I knew what the textbooks looked like in certain schools and what they looked at like where I attended. However, our school, we were blessed, the community that we lived in, but I knew about the other schools, and you would hear about the kind of textbooks that they would have and things like that. I was well aware of those issues because my father was also involved in the political arena with his colleagues, with the faith-based group. So a lot of my dad is really in me. And of being community. My father was the organizer of the Northeast Shelby Community Action Agency, where his church was located. It's the suburbs now. It was the country then.
Right.
And so he organized the Northeast Shelby Community Action Agency and allowed people not to have to come to the city to get their commodities.
Man, you are really, your life is like in line with the legacy that your dad laid.
In line with the legacy of my dad. I didn't even know all these things, how God was really shaping me. And now I'm so involved in the political landscape with the faith-based community and so many different. And then people call me and say, Bishop, we need you here and your voice at the table, that kind of thing. I never had to ask to be at a table.
Wow.
And that's the blessing from the Lord. That's another now unto him who is able.
Right.
Then you don't owe anybody. And then you can speak freely your position.
Right.
When you're at a table, when you've been invited to a table. Don't invite me and you don't want me to be me. I got to be me when you invite me to a table.
Right.
And that way I know that I'm really being true to who I am and helping the people I've been called to serve. Mm. Yeah.
When as a person did you know that you were going to be okay? When did you know that you could look in the mirror and say, you know what, this thing called life, I can do this?
Well, let me go back just a little bit, because when I grew up and was called a priest, the only thing you wanted to do was preach.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't about a large church. It wasn't about a mega-sized church. Memphis doesn't have a lot of churches that's over where you have over 1,000 people,
right?
Which our congregation is that. But when I was called to preach, all I wanted to do was preach. That was it. I had no vision sitting down, or I'm going to have a church this size, because it just wasn't the talk. If you had a church, period, you were happy. You know,
really?
And the first church, only other church I ever applied for was because a deacon that I had preached for at that church over in Marion, Arkansas, West Memphis, Marion, he invited me to come. I went out of respect to him.
Okay.
It was a vacant church that he knew about. I went out of respect. I got there. I knew that wasn't God, but I went out of respect to him. But the only church really I know that was where I am currently serving. And so that's what.
So you never worried about taking care of your family or you know, as a kid, man, how am I going to do this thing? Or let me tell you
something. I've had other jobs than this. I worked for the airlines. You know, I worked in retail. I was assistant buyer. I've done several things.
So in the midst of you following your dream of pastoring a church.
Oh, yeah. Let me say this to any young pastor who may be listening to me. You may have to be bivocational.
Bivocational.
Yeah. You may need to be bivocational for a season, you know. But my wife was very supportive, especially when I was called to the church. It was minuscule. It was, you know, but it was, I guess, okay, probably at that time.
Right.
And but I believe that that's where I was supposed to be. I had no secretary. I had none of that. None.
Right.
But I stayed at it, kept developing, kept teaching.
Right.
And they recognized, Bishop, you got to get some help. We got to get you some help in here. Then I had a secretary who's still a member of the church. She's not a secretary now, but she's still a member of the church. And I remember my first secretary. So the church began to grow. And it was my pastor that I learned about staffing.
Right.
And doing ministry and giving ministry away, because you never grow until you learn how to give areas of ministry away. You will forever limit yourself and be in a box until, hear me clearly, any young pastor, until you can learn to trust other people with the vision that God has given you, you will not grow. That's when I really began to see the church take off like it took off. Now, we were having good numbers, but giving ministry away and trusting other people with that God has given to you is when you start to really mushroom. For us, that's when I started really seeing the numbers just started,
right?
You know,
right?
Like I think, yeah,
altar call and everything got bigger, huh?
Oh, you got bigger, it got enormous.
All right, now when you looked across the room and saw that lady that you asked to be Mrs., tell us about that moment.
Well, actually, my wife and I went to junior high school together.
Okay.
She was a green and she was a cheerleader.
Okay.
Yeah. And she was also.
Look at him smiling. He started smiling when he started thinking about it.
She was a cheerleader and she was a year older than I was.